This week on Out of the Air features musical theater, film, television actor, and musician Meredith Braun, whose extensive career includes roles in West End plays and appearing as Belle in A Muppet Christmas Carol, and now course director for University of Chester Bachelor of Arts Musical Theater Program. Our spotlights on Indian Valley Theater Contemporary Dance Company Kaleidoscope in February and Swan Lake in April.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. We'd like to welcome to Art in the Air Spotlight from the Indiana Ballet Theater. She's the associate director there, but also directs her own program called Kaleidoscope, and we'll call it Kaleidoscope 2026. And it'll be running Saturday, February 14th and Sunday the 15th at Valparaiso University Center for the Arts. And, of course, Amanda Toohey comes to us and going to talk about what's going on with Kaleidoscope and what's different about Kaleidoscope from the regular offerings of Indiana Ballet Theater, which will be Swan Lake coming in the spring. Amanda, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you. Thank you. Actually, Kaleidoscope, I'm very excited for it. Our dancers are very excited and our community are very excited as well. Kaleidoscope is different in that it is contemporary and modern dance. Different from our other show that we do sometimes, Standing Room Only, which has tap and jazz. This one is specifically ballet, the contemporary ballet and contemporary modern and modern dance, traditional modern dance. And it can be very athletic, very emotional. It can be very lyrical, a lot of different things. It can surprise people and also make people very good to watch it. So,
Amanda, is that where you personally took your dance? That you went more contemporary, modern, and that's why you created this?
That's a good question. Back in when I went to college for dance at Columbia back in the 90s, I decided to bring modern dance back to Northwest Indiana. There was some modern dance already out there, but there wasn't a show, you know, bringing the concert dance experience out here from what I was experiencing dancing with my other professional colleagues out there. And I just love it so much that decided to bring it out here. And the dancers have always said that it's one of their favorites every year.
So has there been anybody that has participated since the very beginning, or is it always a new batch of dancers?
Actually, yes. Christy Victor is one of our dancers that trained at IBT since she was 3 years old, and I don't think she was in the very first one. She was in the second one, but she saw the first one.
That's so exciting.
Yeah. And actually, Bailey Rakowski was in the very beginning as well. We have a couple people. So, and then someone who's been here for 20 years of it. So,
excellent. Ah. Well, and it gives a variety to what your offerings are with Indiana Ballet Theater. Is something completely different from just ballet and everything. And so that goes all the way back to 1999, I think, as you sent us the material on that. And you've had it at various venues around the area. Where were those?
Yes, actually, we began at the Memorial Opera House. We've also been at Valparaiso University many times. We've been at the Uptown Arts Center in Michigan City before, the Toll Theater. We've also done it as a tea and at dinner at downtown Crown Point at the Courthouse. And we've also been at the Chicago Street Theater. So we really like to explore the region and bring the arts to as many people as we can, including with Kaleidoscope.
Right.
Ever at the Brower?
We have not done Kaleidoscope at the Brower. We have done Swan Lake at the Brower. Oh. It would be wonderful at the Brower. It's a good idea.
Well, speaking of Swan Lake, that's your spring event coming up, the regular ballet part of Indiana Ballet Theater. So tell us the details about where, when, and anything different this year. You know, I know that's pretty much the same repertoire, but, you know, is there anything different about this Swan Lake from previous ones?
Absolutely. This year, we're going to have Frederick Davis in from... actually from New York City right now. He's down in, I believe, Tennessee, and he's going to be coming up and joining us. And we have some of the people that you've seen through the years, Amber Baker, Christy Victor, Bailey Rakowski, as well as our wonderful Company One and adult dancers, Company Two, the younger ones, the trainees, people from the community. So a lot of that is the same, but the thing that's different this year is we really pushed the artistry and the technique and the athleticism of our dancers. And they've really been stepping up to the plate. Nutcracker was the best it's ever been. And I think this ballet is going to be even better. It's pretty amazing. I'm very excited. I'm also really excited to bring it back to Valparaiso.
Is there anything else going on? I know you've had in the past, like tea fundraisers or things that you have had in the past, anything like that coming up? Of course, this will be airing in early February, but something like that?
Sure, absolutely. Well, of course, we have Kaleidoscope February 14th and 15th, and in Valpo at the high school is going to be Swan Lake, and that is April 18th. There's two shows on that day at 2 and 7 o'clock. We're planning on doing, we're going to be engaging a tea as well with Swan Lake, but that is TBD. The date is to be determined. We almost have it. We're close. It might be the 19th, but it'll be a surprise for everyone, so check our website.
I know. I think I did, and I think they said there were some possible Valentine's specials coming up. What did that mean?
Yes, absolutely. So we are right now working on partnerships with some of the restaurants downtown Valpo. So during Kaleidoscope, you know, Kaleidoscope, we're going to be doing those shows at 7 o'clock at night on the 14th and 2 on the 15th. So we thought since it's Valentine's Day, it would be wonderful for people to be able to go and have a nice dinner and a treat and also have a deal downtown. So we will be putting those on our website. Right now we're still in discussion, but we're about ready.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. In our final minute here, go ahead and recap the dates for both the events and anything beyond later in the year. Maybe what is being considered for the December treat?
Absolutely. So again, those are Kaleidoscope is February 14th and 15th, a 7 and a 2 o'clock show. And that's at the VUCA, the Valparaiso University Center for the Arts. And we have Swan Lake, which will be the 18th of April at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock at the high school. Moving forward, we have some great programming for boys dance and our benefits of dance, bringing health to the community, which we are looking at some summer programming and summer camps, which again will be on our website, which is ibtnw.org. And then next year we're planning on being both in Valpo and at IUN for the Nutcracker.
That's Amanda Toohey from the Indiana Ballet Theater, ibtnw.org, for both Kaleidoscope in February and Swan Lake in April. Thank you for much coming on Art in the Air Spotlight.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's always a pleasure seeing you.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Sunday is brought to you by Ember Forge Consulting. With end-to-end expertise in learning strategy, design, and implementation, Ember Forge turns your organization's knowledge into impact. To learn more, visit emberforgeconsulting.com.
This is Peter Marks, former theater critic of the Washington Post, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP 103.1 FM.
The love is gone. The love is gone. The sweetest dream that you have ever known. The love is gone. The love is gone. I wish you well. I must leave you now alone.
pleased to welcome Meredith Braun to Art on the Air. Meredith is a New Zealand actress, singer, and talented educator, appearing in numerous stage productions plus movies and television shows. Moving to London in her teenage years, she began her West End career with lead roles in many well-known musicals, both in London and Auckland. She also appeared and disappeared as Belle in The Muppet Christmas Carol, which you are hearing during this introduction. In 2012, she released her debut solo album, Someone Else's Story. In 2017, her second offering was the concept album, When Love Is Gone, released marking the 25th anniversary of The Muppet Christmas Carol. She is currently program leader, musical theater, music, and senior lecturer at the University of Chichester, developing many innovative performance modules and degree programs. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Meredith. It's very, very wonderful meeting you.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, Meredith, I've been a fan for many, many years, just watching The Muppet Christmas Carol, and we'll talk about that later, but that's what prompted me to start looking into your background. I thought, oh, this would be a perfect guest for our arts show. But what we want to do is, our audience is always interested in our background of our guests, and while Esther touched on that, maybe you can talk about that. So I always set it up like, how you got from where you were to where you are now. So tell us all about Meredith.
Yeah, because life is so planned, you know, because everything happens for a reason. I don't believe that. I think things are a bit more random. But I grew up in New Zealand, and I did a lot of musical theatre and a lot of singing in New Zealand because my mother studied at the Royal College of Music in the 1950s when it took 6 weeks to get to the UK by boat from New Zealand. So they were very intrepid, and she loved musicals, and I grew up doing a lot of that. And when I was 16 then, I left New Zealand and came over to the UK to study, sort of knowing I would never go back, which is a weird thing at 16. It's strange that, but there's not a lot. I mean, there's a smaller population, and there's not a lot of musical theatre in New Zealand. I'd done, you know, I did a tour of The Secret Diary of Adrian Mole, where I played Pandora, which was great fun, and I did as much as I could there, a lot of amateur and a lot of television and things. I came over and went to Italia Conti, which is a very illustrious training institution here, which quite randomly now, at the University of Chichester, where I now work, we validate their degrees, and I'm the link tutor for them. So it's a lovely full circle, really. I studied for a short time, though, and auditioned madly. And I, after one semester, I got a lead in the West End. So it was in a musical that's always quoted as the biggest flop of all time, Bernadette. But it was the Juve lead, and we were in the Dominion Theatre, which was huge, but over 2,000-seater, and a very small audiences, and a very shaky grotto. It was based on Bernadette of Lourdes. But I had a couple of good songs, numbers in that, and I was 17, I suppose. Yeah, I must have been 17. And it meant the people from Les Mis who were casting Les Mis saw me in the West End. So I then went up for and got Eponine in Les Mis before I was 18, yeah. I must have been 18. I must have just been 18 because it was legal, actually, saying that. in terms of being able to do all the performances. Yeah, it was amazing, actually. It was a fantastic opportunity. It was my dream role at the time. I'd come over to England when I was 13 and I'd seen Les Mis with the original cast. And I went, that's what I want to do. And then it's very odd when it's offered to you. So I did Les Mis for 2.5 nearly 2.5 years, nearly 1,000 performances in London. And then I did a year in Manchester. And I was married to the musical supervisor by the end of it. Much like, actually, I have to say, other Eponines before me. I now know Frances, you know, who originated the role quite well, and it, she married John Caird. We do have a laugh. Anyway, we were both very young. Lovely role, great role to play, an absolute gift, and really, I've always been interested in the rehearsal process, though, massively, and I've had the privilege of working with people like Philip Quast and Simon Burke and people who really like investigating the acting of musical theatre. For me, it's about telling a story and it's about acting through song. It's not about showing off vocally. It's what right. serves the role, the character and the emotional journey. And that has been, I think that's the one constant through my life, actually.
Yeah, you, like musical theater, you're telling a story versus opera. You use vocal dynamics basically and everything like that.
A quick question: what is the length of like the rehearsal for something like that? Like that first, you know, like that Les Mis. I mean, what type of?
It differs depending on whether you're coming in. Obviously, I was coming into an already excellent cast, so I actually came in on my own because Lindsay, who I ended up doing Secret Garden with later, she was Martha when I was Lily, she left a month early. So I came in very quickly on my own and had a very, I suppose, three weeks, I think.
Yeah.
But when you're doing something from scratch, you...
Like Sunset Boulevard?
Yeah, then it's probably 8-9 weeks. Much longer. That was a very quick turnover, I think. Yes, I remember with Sunset, we had a full week of sitting down talking. And I do remember Patty Lupone sort of going to Trevor and I going, when are we going to sing something? You know, she was just, it was very funny. So different processes. Obviously, when you're doing an original production as well, you have the orchestrator coming in, watching rehearsals and creating the orchestration based on the performances, all of that kind of, you know, and the set designer, everything's being made for the first time. And there's a lot more, you know, cogs in that wheel, the lighting design, set design, the sound design, costumes, everything is the first time. Whereas when you're slotting in, you know, for my part, I studied Lindsay massively. I studied Francis. I, you know, took the bits I like and came up with new things. You can't copy, but you can always see what really works. So I think it's useful there.
Well, speaking of seeing what really works, at like having those roles at 18 years old, what, like taking you back to childhood in your household, what was your training like to get to that place at 18 then?
Well, I was very fortunate that my mother was a piano teacher and therefore played and would happily sit there and accompany me playing music theatre stuff always. You know, it's down to that. I used to hate it when she'd play the tune within the accompaniment. You know, I said, that's my bit. You follow, you know, me. And I mean, ironically, I married, you know, my first marriage is, he's, as I said, a musical supervisor, conductor. So it's always a sort of dynamic of, am I leading this storytelling? Or right. Are you? Anyway, so that was right from the beginning. Mum, she was obsessed with musicals. I did a lot of, had private, we didn't have stage schools and the equivalent in New Zealand, but I did a lot of acting, dancing, singing lessons every week. I was just, you know, massively privileged to be able to do that. And she supported it. So, and then there are some very, very good amateur groups. I do 2 or 3 shows a year and anything professional that I could do. I did a lot of adverts and really for food things. So I had a lot of adverts, yeah, and teleseries and things like that. So it varied, which actually held me in really good stead for coming over.
Just in general, too, because with musical theater, the acting is almost exaggerated, whereas if you're like in, I watched an episode of The Doctors and you were so subtle and natural in that. And it was just, you know, it's such a contrast that the types of acting.
I kind of disagree in that it's the same essence. It's the same truth. It's just perhaps your physicality or the size of things.
It's the same humanity, but yeah, it's not, yeah. I mean, the expressions. Well, I guess it would just be, you know, it is a different,
essence, I mean, being now in the university, I find it really interesting, this divide between opera, musical theatre and straight theatre, for instance. And there's a certain, I think in the UK, less so in America, but certainly in the UK, there's a certain snobbery from opera and straight acting that look down on musical theatre.
It's here too also. Well, yeah, and musicals I always described as when you can't say anything more dramatic, it becomes a song or a dance in many cases. And so that's how a musical differs. I know people that do not like musicals. I love I love them for that reason. And I'll often break out in song, you know, sometimes like that. But my question was, now you're in New Zealand, and as a fairly young teenager, you came over to UK. Now, did you come over by yourself? Did your mom come with you? How did that work?
Well, my sister was older than me and had married an Englishman, so she was up north, so which was helpful. And because mom had studied here in the 50s as well, she really wanted to come back. So she came over with me. And as I say, I went to Conti's and sort of left as soon as, but then I also got married at 19.
Wow.
Which is probably not a great idea. we were married 16 years, so yeah. It wasn't a short thing, but, and had two wonderful boys together. But it's, I wouldn't advise my kids to do that.
Right.
I mean, he was, yeah, much older than me, but it's getting into a different thing. I think it just moved very quickly once it just took off very quickly, really. Right. I think even my mum was kind of blown away. I auditioned for Cats and they said, come back for Les Mis. And I had the audition and Cameron said, make her wait. After the audition, we were in the Palace Theatre and he literally came backstage and told me I got it, which doesn't really happen like that.
No, not always.
Yeah. And I walked into the pub where my mum was waiting, went, I got it. And it was, she was like, she said to me later, she said, I realized at that moment everything changed. Yeah. You know, so yes, she did come over. They supported me in doing that. I think at 16, that was me being rather bloody minded and my dad saying, wait.
Yeah.
Wait till you're older. But it's just as well it all worked out. But as I say, I think that's as much down to it being in the right place at the right time, determination, sure. And probably the one thing, as I referred to before, is just a desire to tell the story
exactly
truthfully.
Well, at age 19, you were in something that probably, especially American audience and worldwide audiences knows, the Muppet Christmas Carol as Belle. And tell us about, first of all, how you got connected with that. And, of course, the song that we only played a portion of is actually kind of a signature moment for you. But tell us about how that happened.
I was doing Eponine. I was mid show in London, mid season in London, and my agent put me up for it. All I remember, I mean, obviously it's a little while ago now, but I do remember going in and I was sent the song, and then I went in to sing it for the lovely composer. And I don't think Michael King was there then, but obviously it was Brian Henson. And it was Brian Henson's first movie after his dad passed. Yeah. And I know it was extremely important to him. And I just remember singing the song through kind of once in the studio. And them going, yeah, with John and Brian. It was very, very straightforward. Similar to Les Mis, sometimes these things just slot into place. And I think I got the song, I understood what it was emotionally, the journey through it. I find it interesting that through the years, the subtext, I mean, a lot of what I teach now, obviously, is you have the text, but it's the subtext, it's the paraphrasing, it's the emotional journey that you plot behind the text that really makes it that determines how you sing something,
right.
You know, what vocal color you use, the breath, everything is based on the emotional journey. And at 17, 18, wasn't I? 18 going on 19, something like that at the time. I understood it for where I was in my life,
right,
and used my own experience. When I've subsequently sung it, and it's in the most recent album called When Love Is Gone, we did a rearrangement of it, with my son, Tiger Brown White, actually, I bring a very different subtext to it
right
now. But I think that's why the song is so popular as well, is that everybody is able to project their own subtext onto the journey of the song. And it's a genius lyric for that and tune. And when you're given something that is just such a fab piece of music and writing, It was a gift, really. And I have to say, it's the nicest thing to be associated with through my life. It's probably, you know, if there's a QR code on my gravestone, it's probably the Muppets, isn't it? And maybe my children, but, you know, I sort of associated with it. And what a darling thing to be associated with, sure. You know.
And having somebody revisit it, you know, it's revisited every year.
Yeah. And that never occurred to me.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the funny thing. I think it never occurred to me that it would come back every year.
Yeah.
And because we'll refer to it, but because the song was cut from various versions, it became a bigger deal almost, because there was this campaign to reinstate the song. And there's this whole, so through as the years went on, I was like,
Do you have your Team Braun t-shirt?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It was really funny.
Well, like we talked about off the air is, and of course, that's one of our annual watches, is when we got the DVD version. There's a television version, which is what they call the full screen, which of course they cut the size, and the theatrical release, and they cut it from the theatrical release. And as we talked about before we went on air, is it doesn't make sense, because that's the pivotal moment when Scrooge's heart is really finally broken and everything. And of course, we talked about at the end, there's a love is found, which they changed the lyric, which brings it all together. And it's like they killed the moment. You know, you commented one thing about, you know, having directed musical theater. A lot of times I work with music directors that taught them to sing the notes, but I would teach them the interpretation. I said, okay, now this is what the orchestra's playing. This is what you're going to sing, and this is kind of how you're going to sing it and what you're going to do. And I was what I call a soft blocker as a director. Mm-hmm. I didn't say you have to be at this point, this thing, because I've worked with choreographers and people like that. But I said, but here's things I need to see and hear what happened in the interpretation. Yeah. So I worked with that part. So luckily my last music director I worked with, we were very much on the same page. So he kind of knew what I wanted as a director and everything. But that's very much some of that. So let's take your career past Muppets.
So that's very much an acting approach, and I completely agree with it. It's very much what I teach now, and otherwise it can end up being acting by numbers, isn't it? I need you to move here and there and make this face and wear this kind of makeup and do that. That's not the kind of musical theatre I like. So absolutely. Sorry, so you were saying, to go back to...
Well, you've done the Muppet movie, which for many people is their probably only association with you. But, okay, you finished that motion picture, and then you're married, and, of course, at some point you have a family, I think, of three.
I have two sons and my stepdaughter, yeah.
Okay, so, but how... And actually, that's something I want you to address later on, is when you're teaching theater, is how to work around family and having a career. But let's take your career for the next step from the Muppet.
Yes. No, that's an interesting one. I can get on my feminist soapbox here, too. absolutely. David White, a very well-known musical supervisor, had worked with Cameron McIntosh for a long time. I very quickly after Les Mis, well, I think it was 2 weeks gap, I was offered Betty Schaefer to create the role of Betty Schaefer in Sunset Boulevard. So I went straight from that to Sunset, and that had obviously Patty, three American leads, and me. There were four leads in it, and that was a roller coaster ride, as I'm sure you know if you've listened to or read Patty's book. On the experience, I was 22 and very, it was quite, there's an interesting chapter in there.
You were married did you say you got married at 19?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and then, yeah. And David was the musical director of that one. I had to fight for that role in a different way, because I've always felt nepotism never, ever worked. I had to really, really audition whenever he was involved in anything. And but fortunately, I auditioned initially, and then I was put on some list, and then 4 months later came back for the recalls. You know, it was a kind of a different thing. But that was a wonderful to be creating a role, but quite a tough gig with the personalities around. And obviously you've got Bob Avian and Trevor Nunn and Andrew Lloyd Webber and everybody who's ever done anything. And the opening night was extraordinary. It was great. We did have an incident where I suppose I can talk about it now, this many years later. One cast member actually tried to beat David up during the show for taking a tempo too that faster than he wanted. So that was fun. And we suddenly went on holiday. But, it's an interesting, there's a few stories.
Environment.
But I did that. I did another show after that one. And then I actually went back to study. I studied linguistics with the Open University. So I've always had an academic kind of, because I had got into theatre so early, I didn't do it, didn't do that side of things. And I wanted to do some of that. So I didn't complete the degree, but I did some of it before other things took over. I studied opera because I had till that point belted mostly like Eponine, but had to go more operatic because of Betty Schaefer. Right. And then I stopped and had two or three lessons a week and really studied opera. So that once I'd had my first child, the second thing I went back into after that was Phantom, was Christine. So wow. I still love belting and I love, all sides of it. It's all just, you know, they're all qualities. Nothing is right or wrong. And, it's only wrong if it hurts you. But I just think they're colors to use to paint a picture.
Right.
Were really? There other classes that you were taking beside opera during this whole period?
I was interested in the study. I was doing the Open University, so linguistics. I like the analysis of words. I like what's behind it and, semantics, semiotics, the relationship of the signifier and the signified. I think that's what theatre is, because we don't ever actually know anybody, or even if we know, we understand their meaning, do we? Because all these words are just signs and we kind of agree that, this is a cup. We agree it's a cup because we've all decided cup means cup. But really my interpretation, it's what lies between that, I think, is the investigation that I think so linguistics very much did fall into what I was interested in.
So for you personally, what practice is involved in finding truth and humanity in a character?
For me, it's very much, I draw on personal experience, what I understand and what I know. And even if it's not, we haven't been on a barricade in 1700s in Paris, there's a truth in there that we can find and relate to. And then it's about identifying what is different about the character, perhaps, and how will you find that? So it's about identifying primary emotions through a song or through a character, and that's your own truth. And if you do that work that's individual to you, you can only create a unique performance. You're never going to be copying somebody else. And you're also able to have those conversations, that you were saying earlier about with the director, and say, well, the reason I'm doing this, or that I would like to do this, is because I believe that's a truth in their journey. It comes at a cost. I'm not saying there aren't other ways of doing it. There absolutely are, that are totally valid. But it comes at for me, it's always been my way right from the beginning. And I still have, going back to, when I was 17, writing out the lyric, writing out my subtext, writing out primary emotions, using different colors, different things, and, doing that analysis, then looking at the music, as you were saying earlier as well, what's in the orchestration? Look at Sondheim. He gives you every indication of what the emotional journey is. Sure. Through the orchestra, through Jonathan Tunick's orchestrations, or through what's in the written in the music, or through the composition. So I think you take all the clues you can from the music and the lyrics, then bring your own personal understanding and emotional relevance. Therein lies the truth, and from there you create something which, for the first few times you do it, hurts like hell, actually. But if it's a difficult thing, but after a while and repeat performances, it loses some of its edge, but it still remains truthful. And you're able to, I think you're also able to do 8 shows a week, because you can adjust your subtext
right
to suit yourself, and you don't need to tell anybody. No. It's your journey. I could be thinking something completely inappropriate, But if it's emotionally going to work for the character, that's going to bring immediacy on night. And I think every audience deserves that. They pay a lot of money to see these shows, and sure, it can be huge experiences for people. And I think every night needs to be honored. And so bringing something new to it, if you've just had an experience with broken up with something, or you've done something, or you've just had an achievement on a positive note, work it, you know, work all that life experience into the performance. But it comes as a cost. And on that level, I'm glad I don't want to do 8 shows a week anymore, right, especially long runs. I mean, I could imagine.
Oh my gosh, 1,000 shows. I mean, how do you even wrap your head around that?
And if you're putting that much into it, yeah, as well. I mean, I could do, you know, Christine was lovely. I both played it with you do 6 shows a week, and then you have an alternate who does 2. And I did both. And that was lovely. That was like the dream gig, 2 shows of Christine, not understudying anything. And, right, you know, it was just wonderful. But now, yeah, it would have to be an amazing role in a short run for me to want to do it, sure, again. I get a lovely mixture in creating and writing the course and working with students now of performance and academia.
I want to talk about that, but we're going to take a break here. You're listening to Meredith Braun on Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM. My first question, before we move on to your academic creations, because there's, and that's actually what fascinated me about reaching out to you, is, you know, the great thing that you appeared in Muppet Christmas Carol, but I thought, oh, look at this. And of course, I'm a retired musical theater director. I did it for 41 years, either as a lighting designer, producer, director, stuff. But let's talk to, and I know I had this conversation with students of mine when they talked about going into a career, and I would sit them down and have what they called the talk about, okay, this this is what the career is like. I said, we had a very fabulous program. We did 2 musicals a year, 2 straight plays. My wife assisted me, but she also did 2 other productions at the middle school level. So we had a pretty decent season. But I would always sit down and say, okay, this is what you have to expect. It's not like you go to college, get a degree, and you have a job. I said, a successful actor, at least in America, usually the statistics are for every 30 auditions, if you're lucky, you get a job. Now, sometimes you land a role and go on, and it goes to the next role, somewhat like your career seemed to do. But that doesn't always happen. I said, you have to be prepared for that type of thing. But the one thing I always said, I said, plus in America, there's 4 times as many women trying to be an actor. Mm-hmm. And I said, so you've got different competition and you have to remember how you balance family life. So the question I was leading up to is, how do you balance having a family life, you know, having children, being married, and all that, along with trying to have a career? And then we'll move on to academia.
Yeah, that is very, very difficult. I began to say earlier, David, when I, obviously we did Sunset together, but then as soon as what happened next? Straight after that pretty much was it Secret? No, I had Oscar and then I did Secret. No, yes, I did Secret Garden. And at that moment, David was doing the original production of Witches of Eastwick. Mm. And I went off to Stratford with the RSC to do Secret Garden. Now, looking back, I took Oscar with me. He was 2, 2.5. And being the wonderful Royal Shakespeare Company that it is, they have a nursery. It's a state-funded, you know. And so I was able to take him, but I took him. And David did the end production. And whilst doing the lead, I also had, you know, I had to have a nanny, of course.
Sure.
Because you can't vocally, I don't know if you know the show, but there's a stonkingly high note at the end where Lily and you walk off, you finish the show with this very, very exposed. And you really need to be, depending on the role, you need to be at a certain level of health to do it. So a cold, I could do Eponine with a cold. Fine, no problem. Yeah. Christine, no. You know, the cadenza would not happen if you're not on top form, and similarly with Lily. So you know, you need somebody there to look after your child, because you physically it's so demanding. Sure. So yeah, it's a big impact on your life, and I do think the burden of that still lies with the woman. Certainly that was my experience. And interestingly enough, at university, I've had wonderful performers like Gina Beck, who's also done Christine. She did Maria recently at Chichester Festival Theatre. She's done major, major roles, Glinda and lots of things. And she came down to do something at CFT and brought her two children, and her partner's an actor. And I just thought, oh, so things aren't changing massively here, are they? And it worked, but it works well performing in the evening until they start school.
Yeah.
And then you're just not going to see them. And that's where the problem.
Right.
Yeah. So having Oscar with you, and I don't know if you're comfortable talking about the children, what are their memories of doing that with you? And have they followed in a theatrical?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. That my eldest, Oscar's now 28, and he has a PhD in particle physics.
Oh, okay.
So not. I mean, where did that come from? I don't know. But he's now married, and I have a grandson whose name is Malcolm. I mean, goodness me. So he didn't at all. I think he found it quite peculiar on some level. but my youngest, Tiger, is a musician, contemporary, and he was a classical cellist all through his childhood at the Royal Academy of Music, but now is keys and composing and writing and releasing his own music. And I get it. I understand that. And I probably was a nightmare. When he was little and he played cello pieces, I would go through with them, and I have evidence of this, because I have a series of, I have the music, and we used to annotate the music with the story behind whatever, Edelweiss. It was all about his bear, his toy bear, and then he'd do a drawing, and or he did that one as a like a cartoon or a story or something, and so I framed these and put them up, and it just makes me laugh now that he was all of five and we were doing subtext and writing it on what phrase. Have you lost your bear at this point? Or what about, what does it feel like when you found him? You know, it's interesting. And he writes like that. It's really, but much, much cooler and much more contemporary. You know, he's much, much cooler than I have ever been. But I love to see this storytelling and the emotional journeys that he is now able to do, and that makes me very happy. Although my Oscar is part of a very high church impressive, you know, choir, so they both sing. My stepdaughter is actually a Norland nanny, early years relevant to like people Robbie Williams and like ridiculous. So she's amazing with children and just fantastic. So again, completely different. I think I went through, after realizing that I couldn't do eight shows a week and miss the children.
Right.
I started doing more concerts. I changed and I did a lot of adverts and things like that. So I did gigs and adverts that fitted in really well. So I shifted. I just couldn't not be with them.
Wow.
And
yeah.
So are you performing for Malcolm? Are you lullabying and dancing? And
Oh, wait, see what he's going to go one. I can't imagine he wouldn't be musical. You know, both his parents sing in the choir and stuff, so and play the piano, you know. But I'll introduce him to subtext emotional journey when I have him to myself.
And you have to show him the Muppets Christmas Carol at some point and say, that's Grandma.
It will be inevitable, I guess, at some point. I haven't. He's just turned one, so we're, you know, I'm treading carefully. But absolutely, let's see what the funny thing with, of course, when I was doing all this, there was no internet. There was no everything. And I moved out of London to send Oscar to a certain school that I really wanted him to move to. And again, as I'd been doing different kind of work that worked well. And
But you were just talking about moving so that Oscar could go to a particular school.
Yeah. And it was very much a student. And the school has been amazing, actually. It's a school called BDARS, and it's very alternative. But there are no unnecessary rules and teachers by first name. And it suited all three of them in a different way, really supported their education. And because I've taken a lot from their ethos as well in setting up the course at Chichester, the head, hand, heart, I will openly admit, was borrowed from Beedale's. Bida's, the guy who created the school. And it's the idea that you have to intellectually understand what you're doing. You have to be able to physically do it. So a time step or twang or belt or whatever. But the heart is arguably the most important. You have to have the reason for doing it, to connecting for that the relationship with your audience and that desire to tell the story and to describe the human condition. And without all three, performances are,
You need that authenticity.
Right.
So that's I then created the course actually influenced by that. I agree. It's similar. The more you put into things, the more you're likely, the more you'll get out of things. And why are we here if we're not going to jump in and try things? Again, that can come at a cost, can't it? I'm not saying it's all been easy by any means. I think I moved out at that point because I was doing a different kind of career and I was able to, I put the children first,
sure.
Of course.
As you should. And you're listening to Art in the Air with our guest today, Meredith Braun, on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
Well, I have a quick thing before you get into the teaching career. So, Meredith, were you comfortable from the get-go performing and on stage, or
as
what was
long,
that like for you?
Yeah, as long as I'm telling a story. I don't like concerts very much. As long as I've done the work on the story through the song. But I'm not the kind to get up and just sing or get on a table. You wouldn't find me doing that, singing on a table at a party
or karaoke.
No, I'm just not that at all. I like the I like to know maybe there is something of the particle physicist breaking it down. I am happy with being, as long as I'm confident in the storytelling.
Right. So you take your storytelling and now you're bringing it into teaching. And I guess, again, the thing that I really was interested in is what modules you developed, and maybe describe maybe the little difference between American university versus what you do in the UK, but how you first got into that and then the things you developed. It looks like, like you worked on a triple threat thing, which advice I give to everyone is, as you have, there used to be back probably before you were involved in theater, there were singers who sort of danced or moved, and there were people who were dancers, and so they had that kind of obvious thing. Well, in the world of professional theater, that does not exist anymore. You either sing, dance, act, and you better do all three pretty well. So, but tell us about your foray into academia.
I do agree, and I did a lot of dance classes, was never a dancer, but I ended up in situations, Secret Garden, it was Gillian Lynn choreographing.
Right.
Who choreographed Cats, and it was Philip and I, neither of us are amazing dancers, having to do a duet with that was insane. But I agree, but I do think we all somewhere know our strengths within that triple threat. And so I agree that training is important. I started teaching when I moved down, as I said, for this school before at Chichester University, because a friend of mine who I did the show I mentioned earlier, the big flop that got me Les Mis, Bernadette, he was opposite me. So back from when I was 16. So as I always tell my students, it's being somebody people want to work with is the most important thing. It's more important than talent. It's being somebody who you want to, who somebody says afterwards, I want to work with you again and be on stage with you again. So that's the first most important thing. So I ended up at Chichester doing some singing teaching and then gradually doing vocal masterclasses, things like that, and then asked to write a music theatre history and context kind of module, which I found fascinating. And so from that one module, I was then asked by the head of the conservatoire to write a new course, musical theatre course, which we called musical theatre music, but could have called it musical theatre voice, in that everybody is primarily a singer.
Right.
So that's their first instrument. But I wasn't allowed to for the uni. But so what I like about it is we study all the triple threat disciplines. So they study acting, singing and dance, but the dance element is weighted slightly less in the assessments. So you can still get a very good degree and have learn the skills without the fear of it necessarily affecting the level of the degree you get. Mm. And I think that's been very popular, because I think a lot of people who want to do musical theatre are scared that they're not, you know, Darcy Bustle or the most amazing dancers. And I know that was me. So I wanted to create an environment where they had the opportunity to have 3 years learning the skills, getting more than competent. And I had some amazing dancers on my course. I really do. But it not, their degree not depending on it. So they need to be committed to doing it. But we have a very large module that runs through all 3 years, which is called Acting Through Song. And within that, it has lots of, not quite sure how I got away with this, but it has lots of different classes. We have a really high contact time, like about 28 hours a week or something. It's 32, actually more than that. About 32, I think, and all in all. Oh, actually more than that if you include productions, which are assessed. It's more so. So I'm doing some maths in my head. But Acting Through Song is the backbone, and we look at things like vocal health, vocal colour, Acting Through Song with me, masterclass, integrated performance, that kind of thing. Gosh, there's so many elements. Media, self-taping, and the classes with me are the fundamentals of how to tell a story through song and how to make that emotional connection truthful, and the processes you could choose to do that. But the vocal development goes alongside. They all have one-to-one singing lessons, and you develop their technique so that they can give their stories more colour as they go.
Has Patty LuPone ever been a guest lecturer there?
When did I last speak to her? Not as yet. I give the students, there's a lovely video of her singing, it's a very little one she did in the pandemic. It's a Sondheim song. It'll come to me in a moment. And we do an analysis of her. And I love that, when we bring that in. It's so simple and it's so direct. And you can see her every, I can hear the music. Not with so little to be sure of. That's not Sondheim. It's something, it'll come to me in a moment. Very simple little Sondheim song. I can look back on my thing. It's wonderful. But she hasn't as yet. I would love to. Of course, I'd love to. I think the last time we spoke to her was the album. But she, yeah, there's so wonderful sessions when we can analyze somebody like that, Bernadette Peters or, you know, other greats, Julia McKenzie I get to pick and I get to do it, and it's wonderful. I'm sort of decide what, you know, Sutton Foster, and it's wonderful. I get really quite enthused, and my students will end up laughing at me, jumping about the room, going, you see what they're doing here? What do you think they're thinking? And why were they doing it? What did they do with their voice? Let's look at the music. Let's look at the orchestration. What clues can we get from that? You know, it's just glorious.
Does anybody come into the class? Has anybody come into class to be there live?
To do masterclasses and things?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. No, I get people down from London to do masterclasses. We do. Lots of external stuff. We also have a lot of productions. I think on last count, we have 15 different projects on this course.
Wow.
There's a level 4 ensemble pres. There's a workshop musical. This time we're doing 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. We did You're in Town last year. We have a stage concert for the level 5. So they're doing Guys and Dolls this time. They did Jekyll and Hyde. They did Chess before. That's really exciting. They just did Black Box project as well. And we did Company.
Okay.
We did Into the Woods the one before. So we have a kind of semester on Sondheim. Total deep dive into Sondheim.
No kidding.
Which is intense. It's so intense. And then our main show for the level 6s and their final one, but this time we're doing The Addams Family, which is wonderful. We did Shrek. We've done...
You're having a great time.
Oh, a huge amount of productions and lots of smaller things, bigger things. A wonderful concert that I love at Pallant Gallery, where they have a summer exhibition and the students go in and look at the artworks and to find the stories behind it and choose songs that follow those stories of the artworks. And then they present that in the concert and talk about why they chose it. and sing the song. That's one of my favorite things every year.
You know, Meredith, so, we only have about a minute left, believe it or not.
I'm it's gone so fast.
No, you shouldn't be. This is wonderful. I had questions about what the BA is, a three-year and everything, but we're almost out of time here. But we want to give you a chance to tell how people can reach out and if they're interested. And we do have an international audience that listens to us. But, you know, if they're interested in coming and learning from you, your program, how, if they want to reach out and chat with you, I know you have a Facebook presence. I know you need to check your website and everything.
I do. I'll get that sorted straight away. That's meredithbraun.co.uk. I'm also can be contacted through the University of Chichester. So that's m.braun@chi.ac.uk. And you can go on the Chichester website and see the course. We do. I have quite a few international students now, and it's rather wonderful because they bring a whole different perspective. And it's I think I also really want, alluding to what you said earlier, give them opportunities to do assistant directing, assistant musical directing, stage management, choreography. We have shadow teams for every production. Sure. And as you said earlier, it's so important to be able to say yes and do other things in these careers to really widen your employment.
Right. Well, we appreciate you coming on Art on the Air. That's Meredith Braun, probably known to many audiences as Belle in Muppet Christmas Carol. Thank you so much for coming on the show, sharing your wonderful musical academic journey from all the way from New Zealand to London and everything, and sharing that whole part of you.
Pleasure. Thank you for taking my enthusiasm.
Yeah, thank you. It's been a complete pleasure.
Oh, lovely to meet you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Dee Dotson, Vice President of Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Media, and to Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Ember Forge Consulting, Thoughtful Marketing and Digital Learning, built to express your purpose and grow your reach. Learn more at emberforgeconsulting.com/grow. And for WVLP, Walt Reitinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts, give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at aota@breck.com. That's aota@breck.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.